The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farm in the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. I've heard from plenty of people over the years who are looking for a way that a new generation can come back to the farm and make a living. In a moment, you'll hear from a farmer's daughter who perhaps thought she'd never come home, yet found a way to take a commodity and make it into a product marketed direct to the consumer. It's an exciting look at what can happen when a college grad saw an opportunity at home. And in the second half of our show, last year, heavy rains not only caused havoc with planting, in some cases, it caused nitrogen applications to be delayed, washed away, or canceled altogether. Is there a way you can make sure you didn't lose any of that nitrogen? We'll look at that challenge and opportunity. It's coming up on Farming the Countryside. I think you'll really enjoy our first story. Anna Brakefield grew up on a farm near Moulton, Alabama. She went to college and perhaps thought she'd not have any interest or even an opportunity to come back to the family farm. But then she saw a way to use her skills to take a commodity and turn it into something that could be sold direct to consumers. You may have heard her ads on satellite radio. Here's the story of Redland Cotton. So Anna, just start by telling me about where your farm's located, what you're growing there, and then we're going to get into the story of what you have done with that farm.
The farm is in Moulton. My dad has been growing this farm since the early 80s, and he named it Redland Farms because of the red clay soil that is native to the area. And now my brothers farm with him, and they grow cotton, corn, and they also raise cattle.
Take me then to a decision you're going to make where you're obviously growing commodities like a lot of us do on farms, but I'm guessing are going to say, hey, we could do more with what we've got. So how did this idea ever begin?
Yeah, well, my dad inherited a rare commodity in his daughter who did not really have an agricultural slant to her passions. My passions were more in the arts and design. So I took one ag class at Auburn, and it was my worst class ever. But I got a degree in graphic design, and I moved to New York City after I graduated from college, and worked there for 2 years, and I married my sweetheart from college, moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and I wasn't happy with what I was doing, and my dad kind of tapped into that, and he approached me with this idea of taking the cotton that our farm grows and making it into a textile 100% made in America. And that's where the idea started around Christmas of 2015. We're all gathered for the holidays. And it kind of took off from there.
Other than growing up on the farm, being around cotton, did you have any background at all in what you're going to venture into?
Not at all. I had no background in textiles or really, I mean, other than just growing up around it, farming and agriculture. So, but I did have a great knack for knowing how to tell a story and selling and branding things. So, Google is my very best friend, and, asking questions. I ask a lot of questions.
So this is Christmas of 2015. What begins to happen after this conversation? How do you begin to take this idea and actually give it some wheels and make things go?
Yeah, I so my husband was going through residency at the time, and I was still working a job that I didn't like, and we went to Cotton Incorporated, and we kind of looked at what a supply chain might look like for us. They confirmed with us that the cotton classing that we had was sufficient, if not more than sufficient, to make a superior product. But from there, we set about putting together our supply chain, and that just involved going to different mills, talking to different manufacturers, and getting everybody's buy-in to take a small lot. I think we did 48 bales, super small, that yielded about 20,000 yards of fabric for our first run. By the end of that year, around October, we had our first line of bed sheets. that I had started pre-selling on our website based on some drawings that I had done. But we had about 100 pre-orders to get out in October of 2016.
So bed sheets, was that all along the idea, and why start with that?
Well, so my dad wanted to do bed sheets because he thought it would consume the most cotton, right? It's a large, wide good. Come to find out, it was the hardest thing to manufacture because all of that wide good manufacturing has moved away. So I think when we started this, there were three or four manufacturers left, and I think there's only two now, and that's within 4 years. So that was a very educational learning, that manufacturing process as well.
Have you stuck with the bed sheets, or did you expand beyond that then?
Oh, yeah. So the bed sheets went over beautifully in Christmas of 2016. And, you know, like any good crazy farmer does, we started to work on our next project, which was towels. Completely different supply chain. Another manufacturer to convince to take a chance on us and use strictly our cotton. But we brought those towels to market about fall of 2017. So like a good farmer does, we continue to iterate and diversify.
Certainly people can buy towels and bed sheets lots of places. So I know that the marketing has to be excellent. How were you getting the word out? And then what was it that was going to make your product stand out from everybody else?
Well, we were telling a story that we felt like was really relevant to what people are looking for right now. A lot of people are asking about where their products come from, how they're made, and a lot of that conversation is centered around food. But it's a completely different conversation to talk about cotton and your fiber production as well as the manufacturing of that. And because our supply chain and our process is so unique, it gave us a unique ability to kind of carry our customer through each part of the process, show them the value that goes into making a high quality product in America from American grown cotton made right here, and kind of show that value to the point where people became invested in the story as much as they were invested in the product. We used a lot of social media. If you listen to XM Radio much, we advertised there as well. Kind of took a leap of faith there in that marketing realm, but the story seems to resonate, and they can resonate with an American farmer kind of living the American dream, if you will, even though it's not as beautiful as that sounds.
Your customers tend to be who? And I know that could be broad, but have you found already they tend to be a certain type of individual?
That's interesting. So our customers really come from all over. Obviously, our home base in Alabama, a lot of people have that pride. They're also very familiar with cotton, and that seems to resonate really well there. But I mean, we have customers. Texas is huge for us. Southern California, up into Ohio, Pennsylvania. People can relate to the story that we're trying to tell about hard work and making something good that's made right. And I think a lot of people can relate to a family business as well. So there's tons of little touch points that people resonate to with our story. And so they're not just buying a commodity, a set of sheets, towels, quilts. They're buying into us, which gives us a lot of responsibility to live up to, for sure. But, I mean, that's something that we're fully wanting to take on.
Your sales continue to grow and product line continue to grow over time?
For sure. You know, we're happy that every year we've continued to grow. We've continued to grow our customer base and our email list and our followers and our all that stuff. And we continue to make new products every year. We're coming out with blankets this year that are going to be spun in North Carolina, woven in Maine. And we're also coming out with a bathrobe, a new color for our sheets. So we have a lot of fun going on in 2020.
Can your farm produce everything that you need to, or are you needing others now? How do you secure the cotton then?
Yeah. Well, you know, as we talked about in the beginning, about 5,000 acres we're growing. diversified between corn and cotton. And right now we're using really a small percentage to do what we're doing. So there's tons of room for growth just within our farm. And then obviously there's tons of room to use American cotton if it ever got that big. There's tons of great farms in Alabama and all over the South that we know are growing superior cotton.
What has made this work for you? Was it just a set of talents and the time to be able to do that? Because I think all farmers would say, well, I'd love to have, you know, get more for what I have. But does it take a special skill set, you think, to do that? Or how do other farmers tap into what you've been doing?
I think, and this is what I like to say to everybody, you kind of have to look at your skill sets that you possess and then fill in the blanks. You know, when we went to Cotton Incorporated and looked at that supply chain, we said to ourselves, we need a consultant. We need somebody to walk us through this manufacturing process. Yes, I may know how to sell, brand, and market, and he may know how to grow cotton really well, but neither of us know about textile manufacturing. So we were able to find someone to kind of help us make those introductions and put together that first supply chain. And that was huge. So regardless if you have a me that can market and advertise, you can take what you know. And a lot of it is so much gut, right? And a lot of farmers know that for sure. A lot of your decisions are based on gut, right? But going with your gut and filling in those blanks, I think, is the most important thing. I don't think it would be advisable to take it on by yourself, really, because there's not enough hours in a day or a year, for sure.
Well, it sounds like with what you began, you started small, so there was certainly risk, but perhaps the risk wasn't too big. Am I right in saying that?
You know, I think the risk proved not to be too big as we've made it work. But it was definitely a risk for sure. I mean, manufacturing 20,000 yards and there's 7 yards of fabric in one sheet set. So that's a lot of sheet sets to say, I'm going to sell this thing and people are going to like it and we're going to make money doing it. You know, there's tons of risk, but I think you gotta believe in you and the team that you've put together around you to make that happen.
Are you finding that people that are buying the product, have they come to visit the farm, or do they just connect via the web and just see the story?
People want to visit the farm. They want to be on the farm and want to see the cotton, and they want to see the cotton gin. And that's something that I've been trying to get my dad to buy into a little bit more about getting the farm to a place that's more, I guess, agritourism friendly, because we all know that it's a farm isn't necessarily the most visitation friendly place. But no, people want to see it, and people we have our cut and sew that's in our hometown, and people want to see that too, because they're so far removed. Most of the population, even if they live in the South or Tennessee, or and especially as you move on up north, have no idea what cotton production looks like. A lot of people think that we're still down there picking it by hand. So there's tons of education that needs to be done, and people want to see it. So, I mean, I think we do a really good job of putting videos up, writing blog posts, getting content out there. But people do want to come out and see it with their own eyeballs. So that's something that we're looking at making a little bit more accessible this year as well.
A question I always like to ask with interviews similar to this with folks that are taking a product from the farm and taking it all through the process. What percentage of consumers do you think do care and are interested in that product? And how much more are they willing to pay for the story in a sense? Do you have any feel for that? Because that's so hard to answer, but certainly there's a market out there.
There's definitely a market out there. And, you know, we get a lot of pushback on price, but I think putting the information out there and educating your customers is essential to getting them to understand and appreciate the price of the product. When you can put a face behind it, you know, it's not the top 1% by any means that are investing in these sheets. I mean, we have people that save up. We have second sales every month where we bring out product that we're discounting a good bit because it has a small mill flaw or something like that, and people will buy our product that way because they want a piece of what we're doing, and that it's not even about the price. So to answer your question, I think it ranges more than you might think for a product that is a little bit more than what you would buy at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Well, if they are paying more, is it mostly the story they're paying for, or is it, how do you differentiate the product more than just story?
Well, and I think this is a great e-commerce and retail in general. I think they come in and buy for the story. They buy for American Made. They buy for the family farm aspect of it. And then they come back because the product is good. And that's I'm sure, true for so many retailers out there. You know, you got to, because a consumer has a lot of choice, whether that's going to Walmart, Bed Bath & Beyond, or buying from a small retailer like us. They have a ton of choices. So to get them to buy in on the hook and the story and then come back for the quality of the product. If your product sucks, they're not going to come back. And you're not going to be in business for very long. But if you can get them with the first buy, they're going to come back again and again and again.
It seems to me we talk so much about having young people come back to the farm and having a place for them. To me, it looks like that these type of opportunities would be good opportunities for people to come back to the farm. So if it is, what advice do you give to folks that, okay, I don't grow cotton, but I have cattle, or I have corn, or I have these different things? How do you begin to help them think through the process of, oh, I could come back and I could market this, whether it's locally, over the internet? How do I begin to think through it?
Well, I mean, I think there's tons of us, and I think there's tons of women that have a respect for agriculture but may not want anything to do with running a tractor. So I think just being a little more creative with how you look at the farm and look at it as a business, I think can be applicable to several people. We did a collaboration with these women out in, I want to say it's Nebraska, and it's two women, their husbands are ranchers, and they're taking their beef and selling it direct to consumer. And it's beautiful, and you go to their Instagram, and you want to be out there. It looks so amazing, and they're bringing their six kids out on the farm with them, and you're like, yeah, that looks like America. That looks like something I want to support. Look at them. They're doing something different and cool, and they love their family, and this is great. And I'm willing to pay more for that. Because I look at these people, I see these people, and I know them. And, you know, I mean, they were just moms and wives with creativity. And I think there's more than just, I mean, I went to Auburn, it's an ag school. There's more to ag than just those basics that you get there, I think.
Most surprising thing you've learned in this journey?
I think the thing that continues to be the most surprising to me is probably every small business owner and entrepreneur and farmer are going to be like, yeah, right, you just learned this. But the amount of issues that pop up in a supply chain and the production of a product is really amazing. And that can eat into your profit quite a good bit. And especially when you're just kind of learning how to put it together. I think that has been the most surprising thing that I have come to find is managing that supply chain and managing your suppliers and making sure that everything is running seamlessly.
Anything that you thought, wow, this is going to work great, and it did not work so well? Because we have those moments too where we said, this is an amazing idea, and that part just did not work out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if we had a really big flop. I tried some colors in 2018, early 2018. And I just, and it was my fault, I just did not have a great plan for selling it. And it just kind of flopped. And we didn't make it again. And I learned from that and moved on. But I still have blue and pink pieces that I'm still trying to sell because it just did not go over well. But fortunately, that was only 5,000 yards and we've moved on.
So where do we go from here then? What is next for this business? What do you see on the horizon?
Yeah, well, we just purchased a little piece of land right across from our cotton gin, and we are going to put up a fulfillment center with a little cut and sew operation right next to the farm. So going back to people wanting to visit and see how things are made, we think that's going to be a really great way for us to not only have a retail storefront, but also an area where people can walk in, see how we're doing distribution and fulfillment, cut and sew. And then right across the street is our farm and our gin. And to me, it doesn't get much more seamless than that. I mean, I guess if we had a spinning, weaving, and finishing mill, we might could connect the story a little bit better, but we need a lot more acreage for that. So, and probably a lot more capital.
Let's wind up with this. For people listening to this that are farming, they say, well, I'm just still growing commodities. I don't have the ability to do this. What should they learn from your story and what should they be thinking about?
I think that, as I said earlier, they just need to be thinking a little bit more creatively. And that doesn't necessarily mean making something out of their raw commodity, but maybe just being more creative at how they look at the succession of their farms, what that looks like for future generations, and how they could get more from what they're doing by just looking at it a little bit differently. I think hopefully listening to what we are doing allows someone to take a step back and kind of reimagine what they look at when they see their farm.
You can check out Redland Cotton online. They are not only producing quality products, but it's a great story of how a new generation can come home to the family farm and thrive. We need to take a break. Farming the Countryside is sponsored by Pivot BioProven. Everyone knows that plants need nitrogen to grow, and now there's a way to make sure corn plants have the nitrogen they need every day. Synthetic nitrogen is susceptible to loss, and applying mid-season can be time-consuming and costly, if you can even get in the field at all. Pivot BioProven's nitrogen-producing microbes bond tightly to corn roots, transferring ammonia to the corn plant each day. Unlike synthetic nitrogen, Pivot BioProven is not washed away, making crop yields more productive and more predictable. Pivot BioProven, nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. So as you just heard, Pivot Bio is a sponsor of this podcast, but for some, that's a new name in agriculture. I thought it was certainly worth our while to talk about who is this Pivot Bio and what are they doing in farm fields. We know that soybeans have nodules that can turn atmospheric nitrogen into nutrients available for the plant, but what if you could do something like that for a corn plant? Not just using a new type of fertilizer, but actually having something that would turn that nitrogen that is in the air into something that could be used by a corn plant. It's becoming a reality. And Ernie Sanders, who is Vice President of Market Development at Pivot Bio, sat down with me to discuss some of the research and products they're developing that are truly impacting farm fields in a new way. Ernie, people have perhaps been hearing about Pivot Bio, and you've certainly been in the seed industry for several years. Why did you come over to Pivot Bio, in a sense, to help start a new company this time? It had to be something fairly exciting for you to want to do that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I've been in the ag industry for around 40 years and had a chance to work in with multinational companies. But what Pivot brings to the party is Pivot's bringing some really good science behind an exciting wave of biological products. And that new frontier of biological products gives us new tools and is environmentally friendly.
I know some people, especially producers hearing this, will say, okay, well, there's always new products and everybody's always going to tout new products. But I know you would say, oh, right, this is somewhat new, but this is something that is very different and we have the science behind it to prove it. I'll let you kind of explain why that is the case.
This is new, but right now, The opportunity, even for small companies, to do really good scientific research is there. Because the ability to do gene sequencing, the ability to do some really good science has come down in cost. And lots of people have great ideas. But the group that we're working with at Pivot has had the opportunity to put those ideas together with good science and take it out to the field. And we've created new tools and solutions for growers.
We'll talk about those tools here for a moment, because when people hear the tagline, you know, the nitrogen stays put whether or not, they may say, okay, that's a different type of stabilizer or this or that. But this is different. Explain kind of what this is and how this is going to work.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity. So we're going to take it up a level first. So what this product does is it takes nitrogen out of the air, and then but through the use of a bacteria, it makes ammonia. And though that bacteria lives on the roots of corn, and it feeds that ammonia to the corn plant.
Am I right in saying, maybe I'm simplifying it too much, but is it similar to what soybeans have done for forever? They fix nitrogen, but now we're doing that in corn?
Well, the holy grail was a lot of people are working on genetically moving pathways out of soybeans into corn. That might happen in 20 years from now. It's a really, really complicated thing. But what we've been able to do is take something that doesn't make a nodule. This is not the same system as soybean. This is a free-living bacteria that actually grows on the roots of corn. Corn exudes sugars into the soil, you know, as root exudates are called. Our bacteria live on those root exudates, and we adhere and stick to the roots. So that's the whether or not part. No matter how much it rains, our product still stays on the root system and provides a daily dose of ammonia.
There's been research going on this for a while now. So what have you seen as far as, okay, what could we expect these bacteria to produce as far as nitrogen for a corn crop?
So for our first generation product, Pivot BioProven, that we are selling, this our second year of sales, it's the equivalent of about 25 pounds of synthetic nitrogen per acre per year. We have a pipeline of products that we're bringing forward. We have generation 2 and 3 that we're working on that we're going to go even further. And our mission as a company is to replace synthetic nitrogen.
So that product then that's on those roots, is that producing in a sense all the time? We always think about timing nitrogen. When should I have it? Is it there all the time then?
That's correct. So what's really good about that is we have these microbials products working every day, making ammonia every day. Regardless of how much other synthetic is around, these products are living on the roots and providing a daily dose of ammonia to them for food.
So right now with the product, how is it, in a sense, applied? How would I be able to get it in my field and on a corn crop?
So our first generation product is a liquid in furrow product. And the reason we went with liquid in furrow is that this biological product needs to be in contact with the seed when the root emerges. Then it starts growing on that root. It loves the sugars that come out. That's what it's designed to do. And then it grows and multiplies from there.
What have you seen from farmers that have used this? Have they altered what they've done in their nitrogen program so far? What's been the reaction you've seen?
We've seen multiple reactions, all of them very positive for us. There's a set of growers who've reduced their synthetic by 25 pounds, and they're yielding just as much with our product on there as if they would have put an additional 25. There are also growers who realize that their synthetic nitrogen program is not 100% optimized. It's so difficult. You don't know when it's going to rain. You don't know how much it's going to rain when it does. So they've put our product down and done the same nitrogen program. And they've seen a yield benefit. They've seen an average across the U.S. of around 6 bushels an acre increase when they do that. So the nitrogen efficiency of producing that bushel is still on a reduced synthetic basis.
We as producers are sometimes guilty of this. We think about, okay, I want to grow more, and there's nothing wrong with that. That certainly should mean we earn more. Right. But talk about the benefits beyond just yield, because in my mind, hearing producers talk about this, yield is great, but I'm picking up a lot of other benefits that I wouldn't get from other products or other things I could do.
Yeah, so there's benefits for our product around sometimes you can get rained out of a side dress or it can get delayed, and our product is there providing that nitrogen when you need it. Sometimes you can replace an entire side dress in a trip over the field. And the other benefits that come with it, besides just the benefit to the grower from that standpoint, is there's an environmental benefit. And the environmental benefit of reducing synthetic nitrogen or having less runoff is good for the planet as well as it's good for the grower.
You've been in this industry, as you mentioned, for a few decades, if you will. So what is it you're seeing? Because you've seen it long enough. Are we going to continue to have to move in that direction? What are producers going to continue to have to do in order to not only be able to grow a good crop, but a crop that's going to be, in a sense, acceptable to those around us?
Yeah. So first of all, we know that growers need to be profitable. There's no question. But they haven't been provided with a lot of tools to manage their nitrogen very well. We want to provide a solution for that. Secondly, some of the things that I think growers are going to benefit from is that they're all environmentalists, like I mentioned earlier before to you. They're all environmentalists, and if they're given something that performs equal and has a better environmental profile, they'll choose that.
You are truly out there with farmers all the time. You're kind of in this journey with them.
Yeah, so it's such an exciting new product. But being new, it has expectations that we need to set with growers. It has use practices we need to set with growers. We want to be sure stewardship's there. So our company, and I'm really proud of this, has entered into a partnership with our customers. The last 2 years in a row, we've been on farm with every single customer on their farm, talking to them about how they use our product, what their nitrogen use is, and what their experience has been with that product.
So what are you hearing from them out there? Is there any one or two things that you hear more often than not when you're out there on the farm?
Well, the Weather or Not campaign was based around grower input. And that Weather or Not campaign gave them the confidence to know that that corn, regardless of whether they get when they get to the field to work with it, is still getting that nitrogen. So that's really a strong benefit. It even gives them more confidence in some of their other expenses they're putting in. Should I put down another fungicide application, or should I do something else? Because they know that that corn is going to increase its potential to yield.
So for people that are maybe hearing this for the first time or have heard a little and want to know more, what's the best way for them to not only learn more, but maybe they want to even try the product yet this year? There's still time. How do they find out about it?
So pivotbio.com is our website. We have videos from growers and testimonials there. We have other ways to get in touch with us and lots of great information. So please go to pivotbio.com.
You'll probably hear an update or two from Pivot Bio as we go through this growing season. They have been in the field making the journey with farmers throughout the growing season last year and will do so again this year. So we're going to take a look at that story at points ahead as well. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can connect with me via our Farming the Countryside Facebook page or just send me an email or Facebook message. As always, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast has been brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.